It's Friday. It's the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike Malloy. Mike, Molly, and I'm singing the wrong order, aren't I? Mike, Kathy, and little Molly off on vacation. They'll be back on Monday. Everyone is so excited around Nova M Radio, and well, we should be, because Randy Rhodes is going to be part of our team. Wow, that's terrific. And I know all the other hosts have been talking about it. And actually, what we should do in Phoenix, cue the music. That is Tom Petty. Okay, we won't.
Well,
thank you. And that's essentially what Randy Rhodes said. I won't back down, Air America. You know, I'm not going to apologize. I'm not going to say I'm sorry. I'm not going to re-sign some contract that makes it bad for me and good for you. And what happened? Randy is now with Nova M Radio. She'll be starting on a Monday. Great, too. And Ian Huff, who is the producer of this show, the Mike Malloy Show, also is going to be doing that one as well. So congratulations to him as well. But let's talk a little about backing down. Somebody who's not really my favorite, Ed Schultz, who's a nationally syndicated talk show host on the Jones Network, he didn't back down either. He got into this whole deal, you may remember, but I don't know. I'll just go through it quickly, because some of you may know this story well. Ed certainly was just trumpeting it up and down the airwaves and on TV and all that. He called John McCain a warmonger at a Barack Obama fundraiser. Yeah, he was warming up about 1,000 people or something like that in up there in the states that are still getting snow. And so people... Oh, shocked. They called him a warmonger. Schultz, who used to be a conservative Republican, and it shows sometimes, doesn't it? He's now a liberal Democrat, and he made the remarks last Friday, so it was a week ago. Wow, it's okay. But this is my point about not backing down. But and no matter what kind of pressure was put on Ed Schultz, he just wouldn't back down. Randy Rhodes wouldn't back down. But we have to find a song. I'll bet you we could do that with the kind of technical computer tools we have now, like Pro Tools, for instance. We could get just change the Tom Petty song into "I Will Back Down," and that's what Senator John D. Rockefeller IV should be singing, because he personally apologized to Senator John McCain on Tuesday. I don't know. Again, when you do this once a week like I did, I don't know how much of this has been covered. But so I'm going to just give you the sketchy end of this. And why do these guys always do that? You say, yeah. I mean, I heard his remarks. Well, I'll tell you what his remarks were. Here's what John D. Rockefeller, senator, said. He said that McCain's years as a Navy fighter pilot would not have given him an understanding of everyday issues faced by Americans. Well, it's sort of a non sequitur to begin with. How would it or would not not have given him the ability to understand everyday issues? I mean, you're a Navy pilot, or, you know, back when you're in your 20s, what's that? But in an interview in his home state in West Virginia, Rockefeller, a Democrat, told the Charleston Gazette that McCain, the presumptive Republican nominee, could not relate to the everyday concerns of people on issues like health care. Well, he probably can't, but it's not because he was a fighter pilot. According to the article, Rockefeller said McCain was a fighter pilot who dropped laser-guided missiles from 35,000 feet. He was long gone when they hit. What happened when they got to the ground? He doesn't know. You have to care about the lives of people. McCain never gets into those issues. Close quote. So McCain demanded an apology, not just from Rockefeller, but also from Barack Obama, because he had received the senator's endorsement. And Rockefeller said, "I have deep respect for John McCain's honorable and noble service to our country. I made an inaccurate and wrong analogy, and I've extended my sincere apology to him." While we differ a great deal in policy, is blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm sorry. So, I mean, aren't these guys humiliated? I remember when I heard John Lennon, when I was just a youngin, say the Beatles are more popular than Jesus. I said, well, okay, right on. He certainly is in my part of town, here in Detroit. And then, you know, kind of had to back off and apologize. And I thought, man, that's terrible. That's terrible. But I think there's more to it. This indignation about this, that they sort of, I don't know exactly what was at issue here. Partly, perhaps, he's talking about McCain, who dropped laser-guided missiles from 35,000 feet, and he never knew what happened when they hit the ground. Well, he did. All those fighter pilots and B-52 bombers that wound up taking the lives of 2 to 3 million. There's so many people were slaughtered by the U.S. war machine in Vietnam that the real toll is never known. You still go to post office and even some people's houses and you see those MIA POW flags, which is, you know, the idea that there's still POWs in Vietnam after 40, 35 years is so absurd. It barely doesn't warrant a mention. But the idea that there's MIAs, and we say, hey, you know, we should know what happened to these men that got sent over here by the Johnson-Nixon war machine, right? We ought to have an accounting. Well, there's a million MIAs among the Vietnamese where the United States came 10, 11,000 miles away from our home to destroy this nation, to create this incredible death toll. Some of the destruction through Agent Orange, which is still being realized in births of children that come out horribly misshapen. And John McCain was part of this. Yeah, he was a Navy flyboy, and he got shot down. He was subjected to objectionable behavior by the part of his captors. But you know, what happened to John McCain, there's no excuse for it whatsoever. There are rules, international rules, of how prisoners of war should be handled, and John McCain in that regard was violated by his captors. But, you know, 139 Iraqis and Afghans have died in U.S. custody in just a matter of 3 or 4 years. So the indignation that's often expressed by these super patriots or that want to come to the defense of the John McCains who are part of the bombing missions that that primarily wound up killing civilians, I don't know, just doesn't do much for me. How about you? Well, oh, here, this is Al from Rochester wrote in. And you can send email to me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. That's for the people that are a little bashful, and also when the lines are filled. And there's some open lines now. I should give you the numbers, right? How are you going to call if I don't give you the numbers? 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Al, listening in Rochester, writes, I became an anti-war activist because of Randy Rhoads. I knew the war was a lie before it started, largely thanks to her, who mentioned it numerous times. I was listening to her online years before there was an Air America. Sorry I didn't know that you and Mike about you and Mike Malloy at the time, because Mike and I were broadcasting on the IE America radio network. I think Randy might have committed another gaffe that aroused the ire of the Air America management. On her last day on the air, last Tuesday, I believe, she used the term Bush crime family and then gave credit to Mike Malloy and plugged his show. Is that true? I didn't know that. No wonder she's out of there. The Mike Malloy show is taboo on Air America, as you know. When I heard that, all I could say was, uh-oh, indeed. Well, hey, congratulations to almost all of you listening to Nova M Radio. And I say almost all of you because probably there's a few percentage of you that, can you believe this? There's people that still support Bush. They say 28% of us. Who are they? But actually, it's contained in this poll that Bush's approval ratings have dipped to a new low in the Associated Press Ipsos poll, driven by dissatisfaction with his handling of the economy. A survey released yesterday showed 28% approve of the overall job Bush is doing. Who are these people? Well, I guess they're all Republicans, because 60% of Republicans approve of his overall job. I mean, these people are a piece of work, right? That there's, you just can't say, look, I thought the guy was cool at first, and he had the kind of backward policies that I supported and what have you, but he's really screwed up everything, hasn't he? So even though I'm a Republican, listen, not me, I'm not a Republican, but I'm quoting people. I think, we gotta part company with this guy. But 60% of Republicans still say Bush is doing a great job. Well, we should be proud. We brought him low, right where he belongs. The big loser. He lost in 2000. He lost in 2004. The only way that he could become president of the United States was by cheating. Problem is, there's no political follow-up on the side that we thought was going to lead the charge for us. Well, I guess it's up to us to lead the charge, isn't it? I'll tell you some people that are really leading the charge is some longshoremen. We'll be right back on the Nova M Radio Network, 800-989-1480. And the writing on the wall, I mean, everyone agrees with us now. Why aren't things changing? Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show, 800-989-1480. 81% of the people think we're off in the wrong direction. No, we're off in the wrong direction. You don't have to just watch television. A lot of what's wrong with this country is happening to us, to individuals, not just in some amorphous hole, right? Not bad policies somewhere else. It's coming home to roost. And you see this, 28% of the people approve of the overall job Bush is doing. So that's great that 72% don't, but who are these people? 27% are happy with his job on the economy. You say, oh, it's the real rich people. Well, the real rich people are only about 5% of the population. So what are these other 22% on about? They think the things are just going swimmingly? Did they look at what happened with General Electric, with GE today? It's absolutely incredible. So the only thing that is missing here is a political instrument to bring the popular will into being. And the Democratic Party has had a strategy of essentially laying back, thinking that the Republicans are so unpopular, which they are, that the plum of the presidency will fall into our lap, and then changes can be made. Are there going to be great changes? Well, I'm going to talk about that in a little while. But what we really need are popular forms of democracy. Because trusting politicians to do the right thing or do what we want or to represent us is pretty dicey. And, often when you hear people and they say, get involved, all the talk show hosts are always saying, get involved. And you should. But things that begin with, write your congressman, I'll tell you, I wouldn't even waste a stamp. I wouldn't waste 30 seconds on an email. Got a disagreement about that, call me, 800-989-1480. I don't think it moves them one little bit. What does and what moves things and what has always moved things is direct action in the real world. And direct action can take a lot of forms. I mean, if you had a community meeting, and instead of the usual suspects of 35 of the people that show up at your anti-war meeting or your social justice meeting, and you know every one of them, and if instead there was like 3,000, or that there was the kind of attendance at a popular-based rally that of the type that's coming out for Obama, 20,000 here, 8,000 in North Dakota, then people would start to the politicians, the people that control things, the elite of this country would begin to take notice. Well, here's what's happening as a real model that, and this is absolutely extraordinary. This is going to happen on May Day, very appropriately. This is called Longshoremen to Close Ports on West Coast to Protest War. You heard that right. Longshoremen to Close Ports on West Coast to Protest War. And this is by a longshoreman named Jack Heyman. And he writes, while millions of people worldwide have marched against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and last week's New York Times said 81% of the people were in the wrong direction, blah, 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 the war machine grinds on. Amidst this political atmosphere, dock workers of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union have decided to stop work for 8 hours in all U.S. West Coast ports on May 1st, International Workers' Day, to call for an end to the war. This is extraordinary. This is called a general strike. You read about this in history. Sometimes you see it in other countries, like very frequently in France. This gets attention. This stops the machine. This decision, writes Heyman, came after an impassioned debate where the union's Vietnam veterans turned the tide of opinion in favor of the anti-war resolution. The motion called it an imperial action for oil. This is the war. Called it an imperial action for oil, in which lives of working-class youth and Iraqi civilians were being wasted, and declared May Day a no-peace, no-work holiday, as well it should be. Now the commies are all gone, right? So you don't have to, you know, you came out on May Day, and then in Moscow and in Beijing, you had these tyrant states marching their soldiers in these goose steps. Who wanted to be identified with that? Well, we can reclaim May Day as an International Workers' Day. And if that sounds too, you know, early 20th century, you know, except for a few of us, we're almost all workers. I am. You can tell yourself you're an employee or, you know, what do they have all those things when you walk into those stores? You know, they got the sales assistant. I don't even know what the hell they are, but they, you know, they don't. Worker, that's, they don't like that. That sounds too much like some, you know, I don't know, something from the 20th century or even the 19th. Let's see. So to have it would be a no peace, no work holiday. How many of us are going to follow this example? How many of us, I know we're mostly scattered. That's the problem. What are you going to do? Not show up for work? They'll think you have a cold. Working for a living. Yeah. Let Huey Lewis tell you about it. But this is what could stop the war. Writing your congressman? Forget it. Let's have a general strike for peace. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show, the Nova M Radio Network. Our call-in number is 800-989-1480. Right back. I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living. Hey, I'm not complaining because I really need to work. But hitting up my buddies got me feeling like a jerk. $100 condo, $200 rent. I get a check on Friday, but it's already spent. I'm working for a living. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby broadcasting from Detroit with you. 800-989-1480 is our number. And that music relates somewhat to the discussion we were having about how do we effectively end Bush's murderous slaughter and occupation in Iraq. And perhaps it's the longshoremen of the West Coast who are leading the way. They've called a general strike, an eight-hour general strike on the West Coast. It's going to happen on May 1st, International Workers' Day, and that's around the call for an end to the war. And the San Francisco Longshore Union has a proud history of opposition to the war in Iraq, this article says, being the first union to call for an end to the war and immediate withdrawal of troops. Representatives of the union spoke at anti-war rallies in February 2003, including one in London, attended by nearly 2 million people, the largest ever held in Britain. At the start of the war, actually this goes on quite a bit, but he also says there's a precedent for this action. In the 1950s, French dock workers refused to load war material on ships headed for Indochina and help bring that colonial war to an end. Of course, then that was picked up by the United States, and the rest is horrible history, right? Well, your thoughts, please. 800-989-1480. Let me go back to our screen here, and we'll take our first caller. Sometimes I get talking. I've been doing this for about a half an hour. So we began talking about the fact that Randy Rhoads is now has a new home here on Nova M, and how happy all of us are. It's Mark. He's listening to KTLK in Los Angeles. Hi, Peter Werby for Mike Malloy. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to weigh in on the Hillary thing and what Randy had said about her. Mark yesterday had said that he questioned whether it was business or if it was politically motivated. Somebody else can argue that it was a business decision. I'm going to argue that it was purely political. And what Randy said about calling Bush part of a crime family is dead on. Joseph McBride wrote an article in The Nation that said he was part of the Central Intelligence Community that confirmed Bush started working for the agency in about 1960 or 61. Photographs of Bush have been discovered, and they're all over the Internet, with Bush Sr. In Dealey Plaza when Kennedy was killed. There's also a memo sent from Lyndon B. Johnson with George Bush's name on it a day after the killing related to the situation there in Dallas.
So in any ways, what you're saying is the best defense against libel is to say the charge of libel is to say it's the truth.
Exactly. The Bush, there is a crime family. And as far as Hillary's involvement with that crime family, over and over again with these cases, Hillary has dropped the ball. In her autobiography, she states that when she worked for John Doerr, and she was a Republican at the time, I might note, that was a defining case of her life. She dropped the ball. They dropped the ball in that case. There were clues that Watergate went, the reason they broke into Watergate was to retrieve photos of what was going on in Dealey Plaza. There were articles that came out in the San Francisco Chronicle where Frank Sturgis said, quote, the reason we broke into the Watergate was because Nixon was interested in stopping news leaking related to photos. Now, Hillary, if that was a defining case of her life and she didn't follow up and figure out and put the pieces together about it, that's negligence. When Coretta Scott King came to Hillary and asked her to be part of, Hillary and the Clintons, when Hillary was part of the cabinet, the Clinton cabinet, they refused to reopen that case. Coretta had to go along with that case with her own finances, and she fought it and won, and a jury ruled in her favor. Still, Clinton didn't learn. That was two opportunities.
But you know, here, the thing I'm most shocked about, I'm shocked that you're shocked, because politicians are never going to rock the boat. It's up to the people to rock the boat. I don't mean to say that we shouldn't expose their connection and their inaction and what have you, but ultimately, it has to be up to us. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate your call. Here's Mika. Mika's listening on Winds in Miami. Hi, Mika. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
Nice to hear your voice.
Well, thank you. Thanks for joining us. What's on your mind?
Well, I called about this. I'm really PO'd about this news of Rockefeller apologizing to Senator McCain.
Yeah, let me just reset that, because I was talking about at the beginning is that Senator Rockefeller personally apologized to McCain for saying that his years as a Navy fighter pilot had not given him an understanding of everyday issues faced by Americans. And then Rockefeller said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." Why did he say it? I mean, I don't understand it.
I don't either.
Do these people have Tourette's syndrome or something?
Well, maybe there was a slight error in a statement in the mention of laser-guided bombs, because I'm not sure they were using laser-guided bombs back in Vietnam. But that's an aside. You know, Sam has been filling in on a few shows, including on this network, too. And he's I can't remember if it was when he was subbing for Mike the other night or on subbing for Randy on the other network. He was reading a transcript from a 60 Minutes episode where John McCain admits that he did sign a confession that he was engaged in the murder of families and babies. And since John McCain now is supporting intense interrogation measures, otherwise known as torture, and feels that a confession or a statement made under these conditions is legitimate, then I propose that his confession was a legitimate confession, and that Mr. Rockefeller should not have apologized, because Mr. McCain has acknowledged in a circumstance which he agrees to. Now, that he was engaged in activities regarding the murder and mayhem that was going on in Vietnam.
Yeah, you know, it's why captors feel the need to press out of captives those kind of confessions is so far beyond me, particularly when ones have been, you know, like captured in Korea and who captured the Pueblo? Cambodia, wasn't it? Way back, you know, like 30 years ago or more or something like that. Why they always feel they have to get the Americans to say, yes, we killed women and children. I mean, that happens as a matter of course anyway, right?
Well, I feel that it's much for the same reason that we are insisting, at least the Bush administration is insisting upon using these very techniques to elicit these very same kind of statements and, quote, confessions, unquote, from captured, persons unknown.
That's very good, Mika, to say persons unknown, because we have no idea who these people are, what their actual involvement with the crimes that they're alleged to have participated in. That's why when these men were captured, since they committed murder in the state of New York, why weren't they tried in a New York court? Why do they have to be raised to the level of war criminals? They're not war criminals. They're individuals. War crimes can be committed by soldiers of other nations.
And I seem to remember that during the Clinton administration that he did successfully prosecute and sentence the perpetrators of the 1993 attack on the World Trade Center.
Yeah, right. And they were convicted, and the evidence was... Yes. But all the evidence is so tainted now. That's why all those guarantees are in the American Constitution. The right of a speedy trial, no cruel and unusual punishment, the right of habeas corpus, because things get real unbelievable once the state has absolute control over a prisoner. You never know what in the hell's going on.
Yeah, well, maybe you should say what was formerly known as the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah.
Thanks, Peter.
All right.
Thanks
thank you,
for everything.
Sure. Thanks for joining me. Let's see. Here's Tommy. Tommy's listening to KTLK in Los Angeles. Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby. Go ahead.
Peter.
Hi.
On April 15th through the 17th, there's going to be a three-day march and rally here in Los Angeles.
That's good.
Including many of the labor unions here in the area. On Thursday, April 17th, there's going to be a big rally at the waterfront at the L.A. port. And if I could give you the website in case people wanted more information.
I insist. Go ahead.
HollywoodToTheDocks.com.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's HollywoodToTheDocks. And, let's get as many people out there as possible.
I wonder if my friend Jim Lafferty is involved in this. He's always been, when he was here in Detroit years ago during the Vietnam era, he was one of the key organizers of events here in Detroit. And since he's lived out in Los Angeles for quite a few years, he's been very active in anti-war activity there.
This country, I don't know what the hell is going on. You know, I'm not that old, but things are getting so freaking bad. And, we have to stand up and do what we can, when we can, as often as possible. I don't even know if the power of our pocketbooks can change things at this point. The corporations going global,
mm-hmm.
Good God, I don't know. I don't know.
So
I still have some hope, but...
So you mean it's the kind of thing where I was talking about a general strike. That happened, like when there were strikes at Caterpillar in the 1990s. They said, can't do production in Indiana. We'll just do it in Germany. That gives the impression on the face of it, the power of labor, that the power that labor traditionally has been weakened.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to struggle and we got to look for new ways. And one thing, we got to get out to these events because they've been not as well attended as they were. And they've got to be again.
Tommy,
thank you so much.
Thanks
for the info. Go to the website if you're in Los Angeles. Go to the demo. Peter Werby with you on the Mike Malloy Show. I'll be right back to get your calls. 800-989-1480. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
So I'd like to know where you got the notion.
Rock the boat. didn't know. Met a girl selling drinks at the disco. That truth comes back when you let it go. Seems complicated because it's really so simple. Walking down Young Street on
Peter, we'll be with you on the Mike Malloy Show on the November Radio Network. 800-989-1480 is our number. Well, most of us listening to the November Radio Network, because of our hosts, know that the United States has officially been a torture state, the kind of state that was condemned for years by the United States. Of course, a lot of those countries were our allies in the fight against communism. But now all the evidence has come out that not only is this a torture state, but all the creeps up at the top are just sitting around in a room orchestrating torture. This is absolutely amazing. Top Bush aides, according to the Washington Post, including Vice President Cheney, micromanaged the torture of terrorist suspects from the White House basement, according to ABC News. Now, this is interesting in that they finally used the T word. They don't use enhanced interrogation, right? Discussions were so detailed that some interrogation sessions were virtually choreographed by a White House advisory group. In addition to Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Rumsfeld, Colin Powell. Everybody loves Colin Powell, right? Yeah, I don't think so. CIA Director George Tenet and John Ashcroft. Now, Ashcroft was saying, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. Why are we talking about this in the White House, says Tenet? History will not judge this kindly. It won't. It won't, as long as there is a fair and objective history. This monstrous regime, this racket posing as a government, this torture state, these incompetent fools that have sunk the U.S. economy, all for oil, all for profit, all for power, all for wealth. Wow. Should I tell you what I really think? Not too many people don't know about this stuff. You know why? If you listen to the NovaM Radio Network, you know, if you read some of the magazines that you do, if you go to some of the websites that you do, well, sure. But if you're just listening to mainstream media, you don't get it. You know, John Yoo, who absolutely incredibly teaches international law at the University of California, he argued that it is legal to chain prisoners to the ceiling for days, sexually abuse them, or subject them to waterboarding, and all done by American jailers. So not only has he caused the harm of people in his directives, saying that this was legal, that this was okay, that Bush as commander-in-chief, and remember, he is not commander-in-chief of the United States. He is not commander-in-chief of the United States. He is commander-in-chief of the armed services. So people, there's an important difference. I mean, dictatorship looms in the wings, dear friends. But so what do you have to, what resources does one have? So if you don't go at it like most of us do, what do you learn? Well, one of the things I learned, that only 28% of the American people knew we were approaching the number of 4,000 American dead in Iraq a couple of weeks ago. What is it up to now, like 433 or 434? Actually, I should go to my own website. By the way, my website is Peter Werbe, Peter Werbe.com, Werbe.com, PeterWerbe.com. I can look and look at my own website and tell them how many people, and I have to update it, 4,032 as of April 10th, so that's yesterday. Anyway, Glenn Greenwald wrote an article for CommonDreams.org. If you don't know that website, it's a good one, important one. CommonDreams.org, the U.S. establishment media in a nutshell. And so there's something called Nexus, and you can do these searches on it. And it was revealed that Bush administration declared the Fourth Amendment of the Bill of Rights to be inapplicable to domestic military operations within the U.S. Now, that's unreasonable search. You have a guarantee against unreasonable search. Hey, the Constitution is just a bunch of words unless it's made real. And the opposite is true as well. It can be made very unreal. And that's what Bush Incorporated, this racket posing as a government, is doing. It's eroding the constitutional guarantees. This is not the first time in American history. All of this goes back to the Magna Carta in the 13th century. And the Magna Carta, if everything in it was employed all throughout Anglo-American history, we wouldn't have seen the wars, the torture, the imprisonment, the you know, suspension of civil liberties and civil rights. But that is the foundation document. And in our specific country, of course, it's the Constitution. And, you know, where do I have that right here? Yeah, I'll get to that in a second. But there is a preamble to the Bill of Rights, which I think I read for the first time tonight, which is very interesting. Anyway, if you do a nexus search of the various topics mentioned in the media over the last 30 days, John Yoo and torture, this is the directives, the memos that John Yoo as an advisor to the White House put together, 102 mentions. Yoo and the Fourth Amendment, 16. John Yoo and the Fourth Amendment, suspend the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, 16 mentions. Obama and bowling, remember that a week ago or so, 1,000. Obama and Reverend Wright, more than 3,000, too many to be counted, actually. Obama and patriotism, 1,600. So that's what the mainstream media directs us to. And that's why it is such a poor place for any kind of information. People say, I can't believe you don't ever watch television. I can't believe you don't have cable. Don't you watch CNN and MSNBC? You can watch Keith Olbermann. Couldn't even remember his name for a second. I never see him. Well, every once in a while when I see Keith Olbermann, I think, that guy's great. But in the main, it's worthless as sources of information. Often it's got good visuals, pardon me, but it mostly confuses us. And listen, I'm in this business, and I have to know, and if television was a good television news, cable news was a good source of information, I'd watch it every day. I'd watch it three or four times a day. But as far as I'm concerned, preparing for a show like this, worthless. Absolutely worthless. But what do we do about living in a torture state? Why aren't these guys being frog-marched out of the White House and over to The Hague to stand trial with the people that committed the war crimes in Kosovo and in Rwanda? Monstrous wars, crimes against peace, those are all international crimes. Well, we'll talk more when we come back. Some information at the top of our hour here. Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy, 800-989-1480. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby broadcasting from Detroit in for Mike and Kathy, little Molly. They're off on vacation having a grand time. They'll be back on Monday. Everyone all excited around here about our new family member at Nova M Radio. Randy Rhodes be starting here on Monday. Go to the radio or go to the website of the network, NovaMRadio.com. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's got to be .com, right? In any event, give us a ring, 800-989-1480. We were talking before the break about the United States now officially becoming a torture state. A lot of that always went on, of course, and the fact that the United States had this indignation about the fact that it was going on in other countries, often countries that were United States allies and ones that were being supplied by our tax dollars, was just part of the official hypocrisy. But now it's an official torture state in that Bush has been given memos, has been given advisories to say that, yes, you are the commander-in-chief and you can do whatever you want to people. Screw the Constitution. Screw the Magna Carta, right? Everything that people in this part of the world have fought for the last 800 years, down the drain in eight lying, corrupt, incompetent years. And I was mentioning the Bill of Rights and its preamble, which I've had it in front of me for a long time. This copy that I have is even pretty tattered. It was off the internet. But here is what the preamble to the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, the conventions of a number of the states having at the time of adopting the Constitution expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added. Now, this is pretty simple, right? What they're saying is, yeah, you got a nice little document here, but it's still not enough to protect the rights. And we had this revolution. We lost a lot of people. There was great destruction. And we want to start something brand new. With all the failings that one can point to in the Constitution, the fact that slavery was institutionalized in the document, the fact that that the only people that could vote were white property males and all that, still, this was an amazing document. And it didn't come out of the blue. It draws its antecedent from the Magna Carta. This whole phrase, the law of the land that we hear so frequently, comes, that's the language of the Magna Carta, signed in, what, 1215, I think, is the date in England. But the states wanted to have a declaratory and restrictive clauses, a number of them added, as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution, that have public confidence in the government. And look what this man Bush and his minions have done. What kind of public confidence is there? 81% of us think we're off on the wrong track. And so many of the different articles in the Bill of Rights have been violated. Almost all of them in the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment about unreasonable search and seizure, the Fifth Amendment, to be sure, the Sixth Amendment, which guarantees a speedy trial. Hello, inmates in Guantanamo. Eighth, no cruel or unusual punishments. And that's just all jive time now, because the rulers of the United States have gotten a memo from Professor John Yoo saying, you're the commander-in-chief, El Presidente Bush, and you can do whatever you want. We can sit in a basement and say, yeah, waterboard him now. Is that what they were doing? They also have a box of Kleenex up there as well? And never mind, I don't want to go there. Well, the First Amendment, when you say to people, what does the First Amendment guarantee? And people say, oh, it guarantees free speech and free press and people to peacefully assemble to redress the government for grievances and all that. And they skip over the very first one. They skip over the one that was the most important guarantee that this would extend the ground of public confidence in the government and best ensure the beneficent ends of its institutions, and that is Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. Congress shall make no law establishing a religion. And what in the hell is going on when we find Democratic presidential candidates, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, courting the faith vote at a forum coming this weekend that seeks the support from a sizable constituency with a major influence on U.S. politics? That's what it says in this Yahoo News account. Organizers say the nationally televised forum on Sunday night at Messiah College near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, will allow the candidates to discuss how their religious faith informs their position on issues such as global poverty and AIDS and climate change and abortion. And they're all, I mean, this is going to be so repulsive. For one thing, even if they have deeply held religious views, there's always the suspicion of politicians that they're wearing it on their sleeve to gain votes, right? So you can't even tell. They might be atheists. I mean, how many atheists do you think there actually are in Congress that are still going to church and praying, right? Because they know they have to do it in this theocracy. Oh, wait a minute. We're not supposed to be a theocracy. We're supposed to have a country where Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. Well, they haven't, have they? Well, we're certainly giving a lot of money to faith-based charities that are being administered by right-wing evangelicals. Now, it says further in this article, religion plays such a much bigger role in U.S. politics than elsewhere in the developed world. Yeah, reflecting Americans' comparatively high rates of belief in church attendance. Now, I know religious people. In fact, whenever I've talked badly about religion or I start wearing my atheism on my sleeve, I always want to be quick to say how much respect I have for the religious people of the Detroit community that are the backbone of the peace and social justice movement around here. Ben, you know how many times these people have tried to change my non-belief in God? Zero. You know how many times they've tried to bring me the word of the Lord? Zero. Do you know how many times they've tried to get me to accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior? Zero. They have their faith. It guides them in the political and social and spiritual work that they do in the world. And they think by their good deeds that they will create an example. And they very well may be gaining people on in that regard. But they're not out there saying, I'm for peace because, you know, I'm so religious and all that. But it's even, I said it in a way that not even the politicians are going to say it. It's going to be, I don't know, just so inappropriate. And another part of the Constitution itself, Article 6, says the senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation. By oath or affirmation. It means that when you swear to support the Constitution. So when you're sworn in, you can swear an oath on a Bible or like, what's his name, from Minnesota, on a Quran, or you can affirm. They in this era, one would seem of great religiosity, but actually it wasn't. In the Constitution, a secular document, not a word about God in it, that you can affirm. But no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. That's weird that they insert that word ever, because it could just say, but no religious test shall be required as a qualification. But it says no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification. And here you have Hillary and Barack pandering to this religiosity that has no purpose or has no place in the public square. They have churches and mosques and synagogues and temples to do all that stuff. They're all over the place. The theists can go there 7 days a week. But once you start inserting religion into the body politic, it's cancerous. That's why this is in the Constitution. You think these guys said, we hate religion. Let's see if we can really insult it. They knew the results of the combination of religion and the state. And I used to say, one nation under God, Iran, which is, of course, the best example. But I think Denmark, where's that little story I had here? Denmark is all wrapped up with the Lutheran Church. In fact, they're just going to cut it loose. McCain, by the way, declined an invitation to the forum. He already has all the whack job right-wing Christian endorsements, I guess. All right, give me a shout. Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy on the NovaM Radio Network. I'm at 1-800-989-1480. Your calls are next on the Mike Malloy Show. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby broadcasting from Detroit with you. Give me a call, 800-989-1480. Let's see, let's go to Jim. Jim's listening to Winds in Hollywood, Florida. Jim, hi, it's Peter Werby in for Mike. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? What a coincidence, it's 411. But anyways, the Broward Atheist leader and Ellen Johnson, which is the leader of the National Atheists, are going to go on a march April 23rd that William L. Moore did 1963, which he was with the Congress of Racial Equality.
Okay.
Now they're gonna march from Tennessee, I believe, to Jackson, Mississippi, with the very letter he went to deliver.
And what's
they got it from his daughter?
What's the purpose of this all?
Just to highlight the way things have gone, to show that they're gonna pick up where he left off. You know.
I have to say it all hasn't come real clear into me. The march is not a civil rights march.
No, they're taking up where he was killed. They killed him on the way to deliver the letter to the governor of Mississippi, I believe.
And the letter said what?
End segregation in America, equal rights for all men.
Oh, so it was a civil
rights. Yeah, even John F. Kennedy offered to bring the letter to people on his line of travel. It says, if you go to www.browardatheist.com, you'll see it.
How do the atheists fit into this, though?
That's like asking how do zeros and ones fit into the economy. I don't know, dude.
They're just doing a good deed.
Exactly.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it.
Peace.
All right, peace out. Yeah, actually, you can go to atheist with a plural. Atheist. That's hard to say. Atheist. I wonder. Maybe they usually don't use a plural. Anyways, plural.org and the atheists, there, I said it better. Free thinkers, humanists, and other secularists will be on hand when Pope Benedict the 16th visits Washington, D.C. and New York City as part of his visit to the United States, April 15th to the 20th. Let's see, Ellen Johnson, who our caller just mentioned, president of the American Atheists, said that the group was organizing protests to, quote, speak out against the Vatican's faith-based cultural, political, and social agenda for America and the rest of the world. She says the United States is based on civil liberties and the separation of church and state. The Vatican has been in the forefront to oppose secularism, rights for women, intellectual freedom, and other Enlightenment values. They were never real big on the Enlightenment, were they? Johnson added that the American Atheists organized the first protest against the Pope in the United States in 1979 during Pope John Paul II's visit to Chicago. In Denmark, Norway's governing and opposition parties agreed to loosen the strong ties between the government and the Lutheran Church. The accord, which requires the amendment to the 1814 Constitution, stops short of severing church-state ties, but says the Lutheran faith will no longer be the official state religion. I didn't know they had this. More than 80% of Norway's population of almost 5 million is Lutheran, but immigration has brought diversity. The proposed constitutional change will require the monarch to be Lutheran still, but will no longer require Lutheran citizens to bring up their children as Lutherans. Is that a law requiring that? State financial support for the Lutheran Church will continue, but the Constitution will stipulate that other faiths and atheist or agnostic communities must receive similar backing. The changes would also revoke the government's right to appoint bishops and hand it back to the church. Oh, that's a good idea. But They actually give money, financial support? How about they give it to nobody and let everybody just take care of themselves? I think that'd be a good idea. All right, let's go to Bruce. Bruce is listening on the Internet in California. Hi, Bruce.
Yeah,
Peter Werby.
I wanted to give a shout-out to old Mike if he's listening and say, hey, Mike and Kathy, we'll be missing you and glad to have you back. I was surprised to hear about Randy. I didn't catch the entire story. Can you give me a real quick couple of sentences as to what happened as a recap?
Well, Randy Rhodes gave a stand-up comic performance.
I saw that, yeah.
Okay, and she was suspended by Air America. The rest of it is fairly complicated. You could go to the NovaMRadio.com website, and I guess it just says the good news there. But anyway, she just wouldn't sit still for what Air America wanted her to do, so she said, bye, baby.
Good for her.
And good for her indeed, and now she's part of the Nova M Radio Network family.
Wonderful. That's wonderful for Nova M, too. I was going to say your comment about the 28% of Bush's support and the fact that it's got to be all Republicans and that it was 60% of Republicans.
Right.
So I did a little math, and that means that Republicans make up about 47%, which means they can't win an election if Democrats vote and vote Democratic.
There you go. You know, I just talked to one of my colleagues here, some right-winger, and I said, are you one of the 28% just during one of the breaks? I said, you don't think Bush has created some problems? He said, well, yeah, he has created some problems, but he's better. He's handling the economy and the war better than anybody you would support.
Oh yeah. isn't that pathetic?
It is.
I get that too. So I just drives me nuts when I hear that, because I can't imagine how anybody can support this.
I hear you.
I don't want to use the language.
All right, thank you so much, Bruce.
Yeah, thank you. I was curious about that. And congratulations on winning over Randy.
That's wonderful. 800-989-1480 is our phone number. Open lines. Peter Werby with you on the Mike Malloy Show. We'll be right back. I think that's where Mike Malloy, he's off on vacation. He left the city. He's out of Atlanta. He'll be back on Monday. Peter Werby broadcasting in his place from the Motor City, Detroit, Michigan. 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Let's go back to our phones, see what you folks are thinking about. Here's Preston. He's listening on the Internet in Denver. Hi, it's Peter sitting in for Mike.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
You were speaking about earlier, you were speaking about the legacy of our attack on Vietnam.
Right.
And I want to mention that the Vietnamese people over the past couple of years have been bringing a lawsuit against major U.S. chemical companies like Dow and Monsanto.
Is that right?
Yes. It's gotten almost zero coverage in the mainstream media, but I found a few articles on the web. And recently they suffered a setback. A judge try to dismiss it, but I think they're going to press on with an appeal, and they have a petition where they've gotten almost 700,000 signatures. So they're organizing, and they're fighting back for the destruction that's been caused, and that continues to this day. In that whole region, including Cambodia and Laos, people are still dying from unexploded ordnance and cluster bombs. And that's one criticism of Hillary Clinton that I think we should be speaking about. She voted against an amendment that would have prohibited the use of cluster bombs, and to his credit, Obama voted for it.
That's absolutely amazing. Yeah, James sent in email to calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and he said, and don't forget about the cluster bomblets still exploding every day in Vietnam and maiming 300 every year. I mean, these were crimes against humanity, and he actually says that McCain was dropping those as well. That is not cited. I don't know whether, I mean, it was part of the arsenal. It was what was loaded onto the planes.
And more recently, through our proxy forces, the Israeli Defense Forces, we dropped almost a million bomblets on southern Lebanon. Now, I think it's a shame to both Obama and Clinton that they've been kind of catering and pandering towards AIPAC and other Israeli groups of, you know, militarism, basically. So I think both candidates can get that kind of criticism. At the same time, I think both candidates deserve support on some issues. They're both great on women's rights and a concern about health care. Recently, Paul Krugman wrote an article that said Hillary's plan regarding mortgages is the most bold and progressive plan.
Mm-hmm.
So I give her credit for that, and I also understand she gets heat from all sides. I mean, you know, that your news segment just talked about her office in Indiana burning to the ground. Now they say it wasn't intentional, but either way, I'm sure that kind of thing's unsettling when she's already had a crazed gunman go into her office in New Hampshire and hold a couple people hostage for a few hours. And the verbal violence, I think, is very problematic, and we should not let ourselves be divided, factionalized, you know, yeah. Obama versus Clinton, Nader versus the mainstream, Ed versus Randy, Black Bloc versus others, and on and on and on. You know, 9/11 truthers versus people who don't believe in that. We need solidarity now more than ever.
Well, on the other hand, I think we, particularly on the left, have to maintain relentless criticism of these two mainstream candidates. They're both really centrist. Here, Jeremy Scahill, who's the author of Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army, said, for the first time in 14 years, weapons manufacturers are donating more to the Democrats than to the Republicans. The Dems have received 52% of the military industry's political donations in this election cycle, up from a low of 32% in 1996. He says there's a good reason for this. It's good business policy.
True.
And that's frightening. That's really frightening.
It is. It is. And let's hope that some more constructive businesses like the solar power people and the wind turbine people and the light rail manufacturers start putting some money down and start doing better public relations to get their message out.
Well, if we just, you know, on one hand, I think the kind of internecine warfare that's been going on between the Clinton supporters and the Obama supporters is really bad for all of us.
Yep.
On the other hand, as like I say, we have to say, if you want enthusiasm from us, you've got to really have policies, you've got to have programs that are not just feel good, that aren't just talking about, quote, change,
true,
but really what the change is. I was thinking that might be a good way for local Democratic parties to have signs, for instance, that say, out of Iraq, vote Obama or vote Clinton, depending on who gets it. I'm assuming it's Obama, but whatever. And that way, keep forcing the issue to have them understand that we're not just this passive mass, unless we really are. I mean, we shouldn't be.
Yeah, and we'll have much more progressive, authentically progressive politicians when we become more progressive citizens.
Absolutely.
You know, raising our voices, putting money into the causes we're concerned about, you know, 1,001 ways that we can make a contribution in the media and, you know, you name it. And it's a lot of it's happening. People are making the, you know, donations and magazines are growing and organic gardens are being planted and people, you know, Hillary and Obama are advocating for the green collar jobs and farmers markets. And
to sum up, don't just stand there. Do something. Thank you,
there
Preston.
You go. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us at 800-989-1480. Here's Ken. Ken's listening on XM. He disagrees with me about writing letters to Congress is just a waste of time. Do you think I was too strong a statement?
Well, I think you're right and you're wrong. The problem is none of us know how many other people are writing them. And that's why I'm so, yeah, I've been active duty military off and on since 1986, and I've seen, you know, what's happened in Central America. I saw that, you know, in the 80s, you
sure.
know, what's happened in Iraq. And American people are just so spoiled, and they don't have a clue as to all the suffering. They just, someone said they just, like, have a yawn when they're reading the paper. And I love my country, but I love it like a parent loves their kids. You know, I have two teenage kids, and I always love them and always support them. But if they go out and start becoming antisocial, doing everything wrong, I might get disgusted. I might get angry. I'm disgusted and angry at the American people that just don't seem to get it. And if enough people write their senator, like look what happened to Social Security, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
When Bush tried to change that, you know why nothing happened? Because enough people that the senators and congressmen you would be voting, namely seniors, made it clear what would happen with their votes if they did anything.
You know, I agree with you. So, you know what? I agree with what I agree, and just as you said, I agree and disagree with what I said. For instance, on issues like the war in Iraq, they know that the vast majority of people want us out of there at least within a year, and great numbers of us, millions of us, want us out now, immediately.
Peter, my good friend, you do a great, but let me tell you, American people, the majority of them don't give a rip. The audience, I listen, you know, Air America saved my, because I was so depressed after Kerry lost. But let me tell you, Americans don't care. They don't give a hoot. If they did, look at the last protest they had on the anniversary in D.C. What, a couple hundred people showed up? That's why I get so angry. Thank God most of these people used to have their Cheney Bush stickers on their car, and shame, I guess, of taking them off. Because when I see one of those, I just feel like lecturing, you know, I don't like to tell you what I feel like doing. But I hate to say, most Americans don't care.
You know what I
they
do,
don't.
Ken, when I see somebody with a Bush sticker on now, I roll up to them and I said, hey, somebody put a Bush sticker on the back of your car. You know, they always say the same two words to me. And the last one is Y-O-U.
But you know what? The thing about McCain is true, because I spent most of my military career as a grunt in the Army. But I went back to school, and my last 7-8 years, was a mental health officer with the Air Force. And the problem with Zumi, the problem with, they're great people in what they do, and they're great tools, but they don't know what they do. They don't see it. They go, they fly by, and they don't know what happened. They don't know, they don't have a clue as to hell they caused, whereas the ground pounders, Marines, and the soldiers, we got to go through. We got to see it. We got to see body parts laying around, and sure. We got to see little kids blown apart. And the American people don't get it. And all this. And I cried. I was in Okinawa, Japan, going through a typhoon when I saw the Twin Towers, and I cried when that happened. But let me tell you something. Look at all this. The drama and melodrama over 9/11. But we don't give a damn about the hundreds of thousands of people that are suffering in Iraq or Central America over the 80s or like our Vietnam.
Well, sure. You know, Ken, Noam Chomsky makes the point that if you ask an average American, now it's getting to be ancient history, of course, but if you ask Americans how many Indochinese civilians lost their lives in the 50s to the 70s at the hands of Western forces, French in the United States, and they look blankly because they never even thought about it. They may say, oh, a couple hundred thousand. Hey, I got to get some more calls, Ken, so thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling 800-989-1480. Here is Roy listening to Winds. Hey, Roy, hang on.
Okay.
We got to go to a break. Sorry, I didn't realize that. We'll get you on first off. You can be after, well, a few more people waiting, but I got a line or two waiting for you. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show at 800-989-1480. Be right back. Hang on. Think of some questions. Think of some answers.
Like the weapon in my hand, it is my duty to kick somebody's ass. I have to protect the money of my friends. Don't look for reason in my words. We got the cake, you got the dirt. Fear is my tool and on my way. My God is real, so start to pray. Shame on you, shame on you. Shame on you, Mr. Bush. Shame on you, shame on you. Shame on you, Mr. Bush. Shame on you, shame on you. Shame on you, Mr. Bush. Shame on you, shame on you. Shame on you, Mr.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby here with you at 800-989-1480. And let's go back to our phones. Here's Roy listening to Winds in Miami, Florida. It's Peter in for Mike. You're on the air with us. Hi.
Hi. Peter?
Yeah, right here.
Yes, this is Roy from Miami, Florida.
Hi, Roy.
How are you?
Good.
It's just a couple of things. In the face of a, what you'd call a rogue administration, what baffles me is how these people cannot be impeached. And secondly, I'm watching Clinton's campaign, and it just seems to me like they're part of the same parcel, because I see in the face of her telling the voters she's against this and she's against that, people in her own administration are for it, even her own husband. And I'm saying, are these people nuts? It's like they live in a parallel universe or something, you know?
Well, yeah.
I don't get it. I sometimes I think that the Republicans have things to blackmail the Democrats in office on, for the most part. I'm not saying all of them.
Well, they don't have that relentless ideological drive in the manner that these far right wing free market Republicans are, and to the point where you would think that the Republicans see that everything they've advocated for the last 30 years has brought us to rack and ruin, and they'd go, well, I guess this didn't work. I guess the New Deal type of supports and guarantees and institutions makes sense, and rather than trying to unravel this and letting the monstrosity of the free market ruin us all, bring us to wars and everything under the sun going wrong, that maybe we ought to control this system pretty strictly, or people really wind up getting hurt or wind up getting screwed financially.
But the thing is, if they can make an argument for the wrong thing, how is it that Democrats cannot make an argument for what is right?
I don't know.
I don't get it.
Well, you know what? The Democrats are extraordinarily smarter people than the Republicans, but the Republicans have a way of formulating these little phrases and say things. I mean, it's like they act off these core kind of myths about our country. So all you have to say is Barack Obama isn't wearing a flag on his coat, and then what he responds sounds weaker, because patriotism, even though it's the last refuge of a scoundrel, as the old saying goes, and we see what kind of scoundrels advocate the most patriotism, it still has this power to it. And you got to throw this back in their face, and they're not good at that. And that's why when somebody like Senator Rockefeller from West Virginia says that John McCain dropping bombs on civilians in Vietnam doesn't give him an idea of the problems of the ordinary people, and then someone says, you shouldn't have said that. He goes, oh, yes, I'm sorry, I apologize. Well, that's what I mean. I mean, these guys. Yeah.
Well, you know, to me, because it's obvious what they have done to the economy. I don't know what kind of winning argument they could bring to any sane person. It's evident by the fruits of their work. They have trashed almost everything. And how could, I mean, in the light of that and all that they have done, and the Democrats cannot find something to impeach these guys on. It seems as if they're just saying, I dare you to do anything to us. They must have something.
Well, even when they were impeached over, or attempted to impeach a Democratic president over nothing, and here are the basis of high crimes and misdemeanors committed by the Bush administration. Well, thank you, Roy. I appreciate your call. Thanks for calling us. And let's see if we can get John on. He's listening to KTLK in Los Angeles. Hi, you're on the air. Hi, John.
This
you're on the air.
John. Yeah, I came from Pakistan when I was 26, and I've been there since 1967. I love the fact about freedom, and I've been a lifelong Democrat. Almost all, I happen to be a physician, and almost all my patients really believe in democratic principles. They just get very frustrated because, you know, every now and then they talk to me about how the people at the top are so arrogant among the Democratic Party. It's almost the stuff you're saying the Republicans do. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. The last caller you had, the caller before the last caller, he talked about how Americans don't know anything. He called it Iraq. He says Pakistan. He abuses the names of something we've been dealing with for 5-6 years. Iraq like it's a rack of lamb, or Pakistan like a pack of wolves. If you said province for Provence, France, they'd laugh at you, wouldn't they?
Yeah,
but
we say France, not France, you know.
That's okay, but if you had said province for Provence,
yeah,
didn't your friends laugh at you?
Yeah, my friends would.
Yeah, come on, be honest.
Yeah, no, my friends would.
It's crazy.
Because they're a bunch of intellectual snobs.
Pakistan, Iraq, because you guys are arrogant. I listen to the left side, I love it, but they all mispronounce it because those guys don't matter. They're just people from Middle Eastern people. They don't know. They don't count.
You know what, John?
Listen to the left side and listen to how they pronounce even the basic names that you've been using for hundreds of years.
But you know, wait a minute, John. Hey, wait a minute. If you say like what Pakistan, like
it
that,
it is Pakistan.
I know.
It's not. It's Iraq.
Not, Wait, John. Let me just say something. If I said when I say the name of that country, I say Pakistan. If I said Pakistan, most of my listeners would say.
You wouldn't say Provence, would you?
I know, but I'm telling you, most people would think, why is he saying Pakistan like that?
Are we worse than the French? I just get so upset.
Well, I hear
you. The other side of it. The other side of it. Believe me, Clinton is one of the smartest guys in the world. He could run for president if he were allowed to. He would win today against everybody. But
can he win again? Can he run again?
He's not allowed to. That's the only reason. But today, if he ran, he'd win. He'd win.
All right, I got to go. Thank you so much. I appreciate your call. Pakistan, Iraq, Iran, I know all that. But, sometimes when you say it like that, you say, people just think you're... Like, sometimes when I say Spanish words, people think I'm trying to, have sort of like an affectation. So I say it kind of like the American way, right? All right, more from you, please. 800-989-1480. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. Got a lot more. We're going to talk about Iraq when we come back, because we are between a rock and a hard place, and we got to figure out how to get out of this mess, how to force all of them. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby, broadcasting from Detroit, here for another hour, so would like your calls. 800-989-1480, and I think my wife is listening. She never listens to me, so if you're listening, dear, I love you. I'll be home in about an hour or so. Oh, yeah. Are we on the air? Yeah, I guess we are. 800-989-1480. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike Malloy. Mike, Kathy, and Little Molly will be back on Monday. Also, Randy Rhodes starts on the Nova M Radio Network on Monday. Now, let's talk about, and this will satisfy John in Los Angeles, who wanted us to pronounce correctly the names of countries. So, Iraq. Let's go there for a minute. Michael Abramowitz and Karen DeYoung write in the Washington Post, in deciding to leave behind a large presence of U.S. forces in Iraq at the end of his term, President Bush has made it clear that he believes he will be doing the next president a favor, with more troops boosting the chances that his successor will inherit a more stable country. Yeah, you heard it right. That President Bush has made it clear that he believes that he'll be doing the next president a favor, leaving a large presence of U.S. forces in Iraq. Now, here, Leslie Gelb, who's had a lot of roles in government, was former president of the Council on Foreign Relations, says, we all know it's going to happen, the eventual troop drawdown. He's going to do what Lyndon Johnson did, talking about Bush, make sure the war was not lost on his watch, okay? So this is the most cynical maneuver imaginable, because what essentially Bushco, this racket posing as a government, is going to do, what Mike calls correctly the Bush crime family, is going to give President Obama or President Clinton a poison pill. They're going to give him a situation that has worsened all the more, with more battle deaths on our side, more civilian deaths on their side, more cities destroyed, more infrastructure collapsing, more corruption and incompetence coming to the fore. And this will begin to spiral ever more downward as we see it going on right now. So the scenario is that finally, the American people are so exhausted, the Iraqi people are so exhausted, that President, is it okay to say, I mean, I know many of you are Clinton supporters, but I'm going to say President Obama, but you can, I got it, I'll say President Obama Clinton says, okay, we have to get the troops out of there, does what should have been done a long time ago, realizing that the United States had no business invading and occupying the country in the first place. Whatever the long-term policy goals aren't going to be realized, that of control of oil, of forward bases, but a very important concept to an imperial presidency is that the United States has the right to do anything at any time, anywhere in the world. That we send our troops everywhere. So that's why we have 700 bases. That's why we're putting up missile shields in Europe, no matter how much it angers the Russians. So President Obama Clinton says, we got to get out of there, finally. He does. He withdraws. Then suddenly, just about the time of the, what would it be, the 2010 elections for Congress that had been won handily in 2008 by the Democrats, there's a domestic terror attack. A domestic terror attack, but hopefully nothing on the scale of what occurred previously in 2001. And he's impeached. Because you got to remember, these creatures from the Black Lagoon, these neocons, these imperial presidency, I don't know, I can't even think of enough adjectives to describe how awful these men are who do not accept defeat, who do not think, yeah, everything that we have advocated has gone wrong. Everything from the economy to the war, to our management of resources, our management of things like Katrina. Everything we've done, every person we've put in, has destroyed everything they were supposed to protect. There's not a whittling away of a sense of self-confidence in the least, and they see the prospect of the Obama-Clinton presidency as an interregnum, as in just a momentary fallback, one step backwards so they can advance two steps forward. These people are extraordinarily dangerous, and they have to be removed from the political scene, not in the manner that sometimes I think they hope we will be, but in a political manner. I think you saw today that Bush has signaled that no further reductions of troops in Iraq is going to occur. He said that the senior United States commander in Iraq could, quote, have all the time he needs before reducing American forces there any further. I thought the president was the commander in chief, but, well, Democrats responded by saying that no end was in sight. Endless war. So this feeds the military-industrial complex. So in that sense, there's been this great winning. There's been this enormous transfer of wealth out of our pockets, out of the potential to solve the domestic problems of this country, to create jobs, to support the infrastructure. And this has wound up with profits of enormous numbers to the people that are fed by the war machine. For instance, the head of Lockheed Martin, the CEO there, makes $28 million a year. They only have one business, and that's the war industry. The war industry has one paymaster. It's the United States. The United States Treasury. Who feeds the United States Treasury? You and me. That's where all the money's coming from. So we're paying this guy $28 million a year so they can supply the war material for this enormous imperial war machine that costs $1 trillion a year. Rather than healthcare, rather than infrastructure, rather than schools, rather than alternative energy, it's all going for war. It's called the military-industrial complex. It's not a proper noun. It's a social and political force, and it is defended with, I guess, metaphorical cannons. Let's see, back to this. Bush defended the cost of the war in lives and money, declaring that his decision to order more troops to Iraq last year had averted potential defeat there and that withdrawing would be catastrophic, pardon me, to American interests. Catastrophic to American interests. Can we get some precision in language here? What does that mean? What is that word as an adjective mean? American interests. It must mean your interests and my interests. What interests do we have in Iraq? Boy, I'm the end of the winter cold here in Michigan is beginning to creep up on me, isn't it? Speaking at the White House to a small audience that included Vice President Dick Cheney, the Secretaries of State and Defense, and representatives of Veterans Organization, he signaled that an American force nearly as large as at any other point in the last 5 years would remain in Iraq through his presidency. He left any significant changes in policy to the next president. There you go. All right, let's go to our phones. This is Howard in Rancho Cucamonga. You're on the air. Hi.
Oh, hi. I called in the last hour when we were talking about, I think a caller called in and he talked about unifying the party.
Sure. Listen, we're all ADD on this bus.
I mean, you know, we're going to all have to go into therapy after the neocons finally get pushed out of office. You know, we've been pushed in so many directions. I think that everybody, you know, would like to see a unified convention. You know, I think maybe Howard Dean being pushed out to the front, you know, he's got a lot of honesty that he projects, gets out there and smiles, you know. I think that's why Obama appeals to people, is that he projects sincerity, you know,
sure,
along with, you know, sort of a educated and thoughtful view on issues, you know. So I think that would be after all the mishaps of the prolonged campaign, you know, of all the different candidates and their stances and the progressives pushing for their cause, you know. As far as Iraq goes, I mean, I think the best option for Iraq would be to disarm Assad or force them to disarm. I think that's doable. I think they can do that.
Whoa,
they can force
whoa, that's what they're trying right now. They are destroying an enormous city filled with a couple of million people. In fact,
well, Assad had a ceasefire going, and so they had a ceasefire, and whoever can take the credit for the ceasefire lasting as long as it did, you know, can have the credit. But
well,
all right, they can disarm him. And
Who is they? I mean, that's it. I mean, it's one Shiite faction over another. The Shiite faction that is being backed by our tax dollars and by the Bush machine is al-Maliki. Now,
well, no, we're backing Maliki. So Maliki and the U.S., we can force Sadr into a situation where he has to disarm.
I don't think that that's true at all. In fact, they're trying that right now, and it is having disastrous results. I mean, why should the United States be part of this intra-Shiite civil war?
Well, as far as the UN goes, maybe they can become involved with the next presidency. Maybe the UN like can do a Bosnia-type deal where they get the different factions to disarm or at least maintain a ceasefire.
So that the
destruction doesn't become, you know.
Well, I want to talk about that a little, Howard, when we come back. So thank you for your call. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network, 800-989-1480. That kind of thinking, we have to disarm the Sadr Brigades and the Mahi Army and all that. I'll talk about that a little when we come back. You tell me what you think as well. 800-989-1480. Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network.
The president has got to go. He's got to go. Because he lied to us once, but I don't want him lying no more. Mm-mm. Well, there's a mountain of bodies. There's a mountain of debt. There's a mountain of troubles. It ain't over yet, said hey, yeah. The president has got to go, he gotta go. We want our country back, we're gonna get it. Want to show him the door.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby here with you at 800-989-1480. Our last caller was saying that we, essentially means the U.S. Army over there, has to disarm the al-Sadr troops in Sadr City. Here's a couple of articles I think are relevant from the New York Times just today. Making perfunctory preparations for combat in anti-American cleric stronghold. This is in Baghdad. The two Mahdi army fighters shuffled across the sidewalk, dragging two heavy artillery shells that were laid horizontally in the middle of the Sadr city highway, placing them tip to end like rusting batteries in a pocket light flashlight. A trench 4 feet long and 2 feet deep had been dug in advance, taking up half the width of the main street. So they're laying traps for invaders into their city. Deep in Sadr City, a few minutes' drive past the final government checkpoints, Mahdi fighters in recent days had been openly laying electrical command wires across the street and sitting guard on street corners beside caches of assault rifles and rocket-propelled grenades. However, Iraqis who knew back routes were able to get in and out and easily eluding the government cordon. This is the United States. Well, they're shoving the Iraqi troops, even though their last big bout with al-Sadr's army, a thousand of them deserted, including command officers down in Basra. And on Thursday afternoon, a steady stream of cars, trucks, donkey carts, and shepherds leading their garbage-munching flocks slipped through the gaps in the cordon. While Sadr City residents complain of a government and American, and they have this in quote, siege of the district, much of the neighborhood was calm and that food and vegetables were still available. Can you imagine if this was your neighborhood? Can you imagine what they are carrying out warfare in the middle of this densely packed city, particularly the slum, Sadr City, 2.3 million people in there? According to Sheikh Salman Rafashi, Sadr City is now under attack from the air, from snipers, and from the joint American and Iraqi forces. They are trying to enter the city, so they are starting by raiding the outer areas. They have tried to get in from many entrances in the north and south. The Sadr followers and the Mahdi army and all people of the Sadr City from all sects are defending themselves and their city. They're under attack. I mean, these guys aren't my cup of tea. They're right-wing religious fundamentalists. I don't have any support for him whatsoever. But what in the hell is our army spending our treasury, our dollars over there to destroy the interior of the city because it contains the army of one of the contestants in the civil war? We're on one side. We're on the side, by the way, that's closest to Iran. The American military in Baghdad said it killed 13 people suspected of being criminals around the capital. I'll leave that at that. Another one, fight for Sadr City, a proving ground for Iraqi military. The Iraqi soldiers, and it just describes this whole deal. The struggle for control of Sadr City is more than a test of will with the renegade Shiite militias. It has also become a testing ground for the Iraqi military, which has been thrust into the lead. Again, this testing ground is in the middle of a city with civilians in it. Renegade Shiite militias. How are you not renegade? How are you an official militia or an official army? I guess you're anointed as a puppet government by the Bush administration. On Wednesday at dusk, Lieutenant Mark Dudek, leader of the 2nd Platoon of the United States Army, was defending the forward line of the American forces here. It led his soldiers into the street after a rocket-propelled grenade flew past the abandoned house where his troops had pitched camp. What's the key word there? Abandoned house. Key phrase, abandoned house. Think of your city, particularly some of you in the larger cities. You're in a city, and all of a sudden, this army, a couple of armies, one is made up of other people like you, except they're in a different sect, and they're backed by this enormous, powerful, well-equipped army from another country. You get out of your house because you know that maybe you and your wife and your children and everything you hold dear could be destroyed, including your lives. And then you have an abandoned house. And that's where the soldiers from this other country take up residence while they're trying to create this proving ground for the Iraq military. This is a monstrous disaster, folks. We've got to get out of there immediately. How to do it. Talk about that when we get back. Your calls, too, at 1-800-989-1480. Peter Werby on the Mike Valoy Show. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby in, broadcasting from Detroit. And our phone and number, 800 989-1480. I think I'm going to do a lot of calls, so I've been talking a lot tonight. But I did want to read this one email. It's from Pam in Wyandotte, Michigan, sort of a suburb of Detroit. I won't even go on why it's sort of, but it's a suburb of Detroit. All right. And Pam writes in, it's wonderful to hear you filling in for Mike. She listens to my Detroit show. By the way, if you want to check out how you can hear me further on the Internet, unless you live in the Detroit area where I broadcast on WRIF-FM, you can go to my website at Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E. PeterWerbe.com, and I was just telling Ian Huff, who's making this show happen in Phoenix, that there's also all the photographs of my trip to Cuba that I took in February. Anyway, she says, nice to hear you filling in for Mike. I wanted to let you know that the group Women in Black will be joining our protest tomorrow. I'll tell you about that in a second. Thank you so much for putting us in touch with one another, which is another long story. While you have a national microphone, please remind people that it doesn't take much effort to start a protest in your own neighborhood. Everyone can't make it to the big demonstrations in Washington or Los Angeles. A few people and signs on a busy corner will get attention, and people will immediately want to get involved. That's how we started, and now we have a good showing every week. Congressman John Conyers visits at least once a month, and Dennis Kucinich came on his campaign bus, and we had hundreds of people. We've been written up in the local paper three times, and we petitioned City Hall for a resolution to oppose military operations in Iraq, and we won. In our own little corner of the world, we are starting a movement, and anyone can do it. Thanks, Peter. Oh, you helped inspire me to get started. Well, you inspire me, Pam, to keep on going and keep on talking. Because after all, it ain't talk, it's action. And by the way, if you're in the Detroit area, there is a Women in Black and joint Ypsilanti group protest tomorrow. You can go to the calendar on my website and get all the information. And if you think, wait a minute, you know, this is going out all over the country. This stuff, as Pam is saying, what happens in one spot is a model for what can happen elsewhere. Like in our first hour, I think it was, we were talking about the longshoremen who on May 1st are going to close all the West Coast ports to say end the war in Iraq. All right, let's go to our phones, and here's Susan. She's listening on the Internet in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to talk about the Founders Club.
The Nova M Founders Club.
Yep.
Okay.
It's $100 a year, but you can also do it by the month. And if somebody's thinking, oh, my God, that's too much money, I just did my taxes, our taxes, me and my husband.
Okay.
Our taxable income is under $12,000 a year. We're living on Social Security.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's not a lot.
Now, before you get to thinking that you can't afford that Nova Am Founders Club, I'm not only a member of the Founders Club, I put in hefty donations to Head On Radio, and I subscribe to Stephanie Miller's Stephcast, because if you do not support these people, they're not going to be there.
I agree. And you know, Susan, people give a lot of money to National Public Radio and their local affiliates, and mostly they deserve it. But it's even more crucial, I think, to have the kind of programs and networks being supported that you're talking about. Because, the NPR has its limitations, that's for sure.
Yeah, and if the mics go dark on Head on Nova Am, where is the liberal talk going to be?
You got
then
it.
We get to listen to Pravda.
<or something. laughs> Well, Susan, thank you for that big support. I mean, it takes a big consciousness and a big heart to on such a small budget to be that generous. So here at Nova M, we thank you incredibly.
Well, I'm part Scott, so it comes naturally.
There you go. Thank you, Susan.
You have a nice night.
You too. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
And let's go to Hope. Hope is listening on the Internet in San Francisco. Hope, hi. It's Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. It's a pleasure to hear your voice. I love when you host Mike's show.
I love to do it. Thank you.
Just a little tiny bone to pick. It is Pakistan, actually, and it is Iraq.
I know.
It makes me nuts to hear people mispronounce it. I'm a Caucasian American, not of any ethnic background from either of those regions, but it does make me crazy because I think it makes Americans sound stupid.
So you think I should say Pakistan?
You don't. It doesn't have to be an affectation. It doesn't have to be Pakistan.
Well, that's what it is.
No, it's Pakistan. Just like Tupac Shakur. Tupac.
Here, agreeing with you is Cindy, who's listening in Washington State. The caller was telling you what people are thinking and feeling worldwide. He is right to expect us to say the nation properly. Your reaction was Amera arrogant big time. So I don't know. I didn't think I was.
I think he mostly caught you unawares. So
okay.
I'm willing to give you the benefit of the doubt. But the truth is, this inundation in the public media, the mainstream media, pretty much everywhere, of say the use of the word Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm. The mainstream media says Democrat Party. That's a Republican Rush Limbaugh phrase.
Right. Well, I don't think I haven't heard a newscaster say it, but I've certainly heard I've heard guests on the show say it, not be corrected.
I don't even get it. Why do they like to do that?
Because it's insulting. Because it makes it sound like we're singular rather than plural, rather than a group larger than theirs. It's pretty ridiculous.
You think that's what it's about? I don't know.
I do.
I mean, what if they called
it,
instead of the Democratic Party, it's the Democrat Party.
Well, it's insulting in any case. And I mean, during my Air Force career, a good part of it was spent in Germany. And it was really important for me to not be an ugly American. I learned German. I tried to, participate in local customs, that kind of stuff. And I just think it's really important, especially now when our image is so tarnished in the world, that I think it's important that we just be simply respectful of other nations and pronounce their country right.
All right, Hope. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bye now. And let's see, here is, it's Al, or AJ, listening on KTLK in Burbank, California. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, Peter, I just wanted to mention, I don't know if you talked about Osama's remarks today that he had made last week.
Who?
Osama. I'm sorry, Obama.
That's going to get you.
I apologize. He's right on the mark. I grew up in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and that place has been sliding for 30 years. They made movies about it, Slapshot and All the Right Moves.
Yeah.
And my dad saw the writing on the wall. He sent me to a trade tech school. I got out of there and never looked back.
You know, there was a guy that came and cleaned our carpeting, professional firm. And and he knows that I do a talk show in Detroit. And he listens to it, right? So you would think he was pretty much in tune with what I was saying. He was very favorable, and he said, I'm going to vote for Obama. And I said, well, good. And he said, assuming he's the presidential candidate. And I said, good. He said, do you think it matters that he's a Muslim? I said, what?
He's not a Muslim.
Well, I know. But listen, the point of the story is, here's a guy that listens to my show that says he's going to vote for him and thinks he's a Muslim. So I said, where did you get the idea he's a Muslim? And he said, on the Internet. And I went, do you remember the thing that went down just a few weeks ago with his Christian preacher? He said, no.
Yes.
He said, no, he didn't remember. This is the dialogue I'm having with the guy cleaning the carpet. So,
well, that's how spin works. That's how the right wing spin works. It confuses people. They also say that his mom was a racist, an atheist from Kansas. Like that matters.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a horrible thing. She was an atheist.
Well,
like,
you just wait. I mean, they're saving. They're keeping their powder dry. The right wing lie machine for when Obama gets the nomination.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I've been on the blogs all night, and, there's so many stupid people out there, I feel sorry for the country. You know, if we get Clinton or we get McCain, it's going to be more of the same. And it's so sad that it's finally taken 30 years and somebody's told these people the truth, and the right wing wants to make it look like a slam on them.
All right, AJ, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. We could probably, rather than getting another call in, go to a break right now, because then we'll have a longer final segment. He brings up the music so well, doesn't he? Yeah, this is a shame that this has gone by so quickly for me. Ian Huff, who's doing the phones, putting on the music, making sure I understand what's going on at our headquarters in Phoenix for Nova M Radio Network. We were saying, man, this is speeding by. So we'll have one nice long segment to end the program. If you'd like to join us in the time remaining, it's 800-989-1480. Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy. I'll be right back. I can say it better than that. Welcome back is what I was trying to say to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby here, substituting for Mike. Mike's going to be back on Monday, but those of you like me who have missed him, you can see him on CNN. He's going to be on a CNN show, 9:30 a.m. Sunday. All the details at MikeMalloy.com. All the details on me at PeterWerby.com, W-E-R-B-E.com. 800-989-1480, final segment. Get those calls in. It's the last chance you're going to have to talk to me until, I guess, the next time Mike goes on vacation. Here's Daniel listening on Sirius in Flagstaff, Arizona. Hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, sir.
And I always enjoy catching you when you're filling in for someone.
Great. What's up?
I've been doing a little bit of study on debate or argumentation.
Uh-huh.
It's a real science that's taught. There's a way to do it if you want to find the truth, and there's a way to do it if you want to obscure the truth. And the Republicans are masters at obscuring the truth with false choices. They're establishing false premise in the question or attacking the questioner. And there's many other ways to do it. You know, I don't want to go on and on and on about it, but it's really hard to have an honest debate with someone who's so intent on obscuring the truth.
Well, that's why, you know, I love Tom Hartman's show, and I think he's one of the best. He's an old pal of mine. But how he can get those right-wingers on his show and debate with them, because it's always apples and oranges. There's not even an agreement on what reality is. And those folks are on some, you know, they're in some parallel universe. So
that's one of the ways of having a dishonest debate is not recognizing or admitting to what the reality is.
Yeah, the other thing they do, they have this command of language. Of course, it's what their phraseology is picked up by the media, so they can have like socialized medicine, special interest group, right to life,
or fight them over there, so we don't have to fight them over here, which is an incredibly false question. There are more choices than that.
You know, when they, and in fact, I may have even used it on this program before, rather than calling the anti-abortion forces pro-life, I always call them the compulsory pregnancy movement, you know.
That's good.
Yeah, and the right to work is actually the right to scab, the right to, you know, to take people's union jobs. And but they just don't work as well. There is something like you know, Truman wanted to have a national health program. The AMA, the American Medical Association at the time, made up this phrase, socialized medicine. And people went, socialism? Well, sure we should socialize medicine. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
There's another issue I'd like to make a short comment on.
Do it quick, because we're getting out of time, and I want to get these final callers on as well as you. But go ahead.
Yes, the money that we're giving to the war profiteers.
Sure.
It's not coming out of our tax money. We're putting it on our grandkids' credit card.
That's right. That's right. Today, if you think about that, when we look at what is coming out of our taxes, that's going to pay debt service on the bill that Bush Co. has run up. All right, let me get some more calls. Daniel, thanks for calling. Appreciate talking to you. Let's see here. On Sirius Satellite, Douglas listening in New Jersey. You know where the word Democrat Party originated?
Yeah, it was back in the early 90s. I'm not sure if it was before or after the Republicans took over Congress. But Newt Gingrich came on national television being interviewed for something, and I saw it myself. And he made the statement that since there is nothing Democratic about the Democratic Party, from that point on, he would refer to it as the Democrat Party.
Oh.
And from that point on, you know, the more partisan Republicans joined in. Oddly enough, the only person I have ever heard in the media correct somebody about that was Chris Matthews. Historically speaking, actually, this attempt to change the name of the party by the Republicans goes back into the 1800s. They had made several attempts to do it, but of course they didn't have radio and TV, you know, to participate in it like they do now. But as far as the modern movement to try to change the name goes, it started with Gingrich back in the early 90s.
Well, you know, some of these parties in the 19th century, and I'm forgetting my history, they actually took the name of what was the insult to them. But I think, was it Hope who said that she was insulted by the use of the phrase Democrat Party? I don't know. I mean, it's her. Who cares what those...
Well, it was intended as an insult.
Yeah.
When it began. Even in the earlier attempts, it was intended as an insult. And, you know, what can I say?
Well,
that's how it started.
Well, get this.
Personally, I would, I would love to hear people start referring to the Republicans.
Well,
you know, that's easy enough.
Yeah. You know, I think when it goes over the heads of most people, Ian in Phoenix, behind the scenes there, he said he did a Wikipedia search, and he says it's been used since the 1940s.
Yeah. Well, I never heard it. You know, I'm a you know, news junkie, an information junkie. I never heard it until Gingrich started it. But,
okay, well, that's good information. Let me get this final call in, Douglas. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. And here's Mike. He's listening on KPOJ in Vancouver. You got about 20 seconds. Tell me real quick.
Okay. Pueblo was North Korea. They were 200 miles off, supposedly. It was a spy ship, and the Koreans caught him.
Oh, you're reminding me from like a couple of hours ago what the Pueblo was.
Well, I'm hearing it here at KPOJ. Just about 15, 20 minutes ago.
Oh, I guess we're on quite a delay. Yeah, you're right. You're right. And they were captured. It was so that the sailors were captured by the North Koreans.
Also wanted to say Watergate was the result of ITT, Dita Baird, if you looked it up on the Internet, Dita Baird.
We'll do it. All right. Thank you, Mike. Hey, Ian Huff, thank you for doing it all. Thanks to all of you for listening. Mike will be back next Monday. We'll talk again. Peter Werby, over and out. Just like my mama said.